Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. February 23, 2020. Arava Congress 2020. From my Facebook page, Michael Leitman, the 23rd of February 2020. The people of Israel have a close relationship with the desert. In each era we come and go, wandering and returning to this barren place. And so do we, students and members of Beni Baruch from all over the world disconnect once a year, and head for a weekend in the desert, to unite and focus on the power of connection between us. There are no disturbances in the quiet desert. The thoughts are clear. Intentions flow. The desert is not like the image that comes to mind, a dead space with nothing. The desert has a sea of life. A little digging in the ground will reveal real water sources. As with our inner relationships, we go a little deeper and discover a new dimension, perfect and eternal. Ask the Creator to raise your friends to Him. How can I find out what to ask the Creator? I look at others and write down in my notebook all the faults that I see in my friends and then demand that the Creator correct those qualities in me, which are the reason that I see everything upside down. We need to do such an exercise in the 10. Everyone writes a list and addresses each position with a prayer, even several times, praying for every fault that he sees in his friends. I ask the Creator to correct me so that I will see perfection instead of flaws. It must be a very specific prayer for every flaw that I see in each friend in order to invert my eyesight and admire the greatness of my friends. I exalt the friends and the Creator who made a correction in me, allowing me to see the 10 as perfect. What is left for me to do after I see everyone as perfect? I must now try to penetrate even more into my friends, cling onto them, annul myself before them, immerse in them, and then I will receive all of their properties as the upper 9 sephirot in relation to my malkhut, my desire to receive. I will be ready to support and help them in every way possible, and I will thus come closer to building a spiritual partsuf. To stop seeing flaws in my friend is the very first correction that I start with if I want to progress. After all, this is of greatest concern to me right now. A flaw is all that interferes with our union and disallows my seeing the greatness of the friend. The friend's greatness is that he is connected with all the other friends and with the Creator, and therefore, I want to be in connection with him. If I correct my view so as not to see faults in my friends, I will stick to all 9 of them, I will be ready to support them, that is, to work like Malkhut in relation to the upper 9 Sephirot. I will pray for them. Do everything to serve them. I will feel that until I fulfill them, they will be unable to perform a spiritual action. Therefore, I turn to the Creator and ask for help. The 10 now becomes even more important for me than the Creator and, of course, more important than myself. All I ask is to let me fulfill them for their benefit. I ask the Creator, tell me, what can I do to make them appear perfect before you? This means that I annul myself and raise my friends to the level of the Creator. This is already a spiritual state. I see that the friends in the 10 understand each other and support each other. But I seem to be standing on the sidelines and do not even understand what they are talking about. I feel no taste in the connection that attracts them so much, in mutual help. I am amazed at how they manage to feel so close to each other, a connection I am incapable of. Therefore, I ask the Creator for help, realizing that I myself will never achieve this. I see that the friends have spiritual powers because they can relate to each other in such a way. These are clearly not forces of this world, but spiritual forces that they have received from the study, the lessons, and dissemination. But I have not received such strength, so what should I do? I do not want to lag behind. First of all, I hold back my friends, becoming a burden for the 10. I thus pray to the Creator to give me the strength to be included in my friends, annul myself before them, bow down, and turn into dust under their feet. At first, before I started working on my correction, my friends seemed insignificant and idiotic to me. I automatically criticized everyone, or at least was indifferent to them. I did not feel that everyone stood inside my heart as a special spiritual image, a Sephirah. Gradually, my view of the spiritual world begins to run through my friends. When we speak of spirituality, I no longer think of the Creator but of them. Friends stand before me like nine deities, idols. I do not know how to work with them yet, but I already see that spirituality is achieved through them, by how together with my friends, I build my spiritual picture. They currently obscure spirituality from me, but they are on the way there, pointing me in the right direction. And this is already progress. From the second part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, February 1, 2020, preparation for convention. The Times of Israel published my new article, The World of Academia, An Anti-Semitic Stronghold. Hatred against Jews and Israel is no longer marginal but mainstream on college campuses. In the U.S., for example, a group of Jewish Harvard students formed an anti-Zionist coalition that included support for BDS, while a Jewish student, Adla Kojab, sued NYU alleging her alma mater does not do enough to combat anti-Semitism. Such polarized environments prevail on campuses today, where anti-Semitic incidents have risen dramatically in recent years. Anti-Zionist sentiments are also evident across the ocean. In Germany, 20% of academics support the right to reject the existence of the State of Israel as part of free speech on campus, revealed a recent study commissioned by the Christian Democratic Union's think tank. Why has academia become such a bastion of anti-Israel hatred? Freedom to attack. According to monitoring groups, in America, there were 201 anti-Semitic incidents on U.S. university and college campuses in 2018 alone, involving harassment, vandalism, and physical assault. Many more cases go unreported because of the inaction of faculties to combat discrimination against Jewish students, especially when prejudice and anti-Israeli initiatives come from Jews themselves, Jewish Voice for Peace being the most vociferous group, active with numerous chapters on campuses across America. President Trump signed an executive order to combat anti-Semitism on campuses, conditioning governmental funding upon whether or not universities fail to reject anti-Jewish bias. But even those in favor of the initiative question whether its enforcement is realistic, since fighting bigotry might contradict freedom of speech. What built the bastion of hatred? Academia, the stronghold of the learned and educated, has become a fertile hothouse of bigotry and discrimination for various reasons. First, because among students there will always be people proficient in the art of rhetoric who can formulate their ideas assertively to justify such motions as boycotts, using logic difficult to disagree with. These opinionated people also understand how to propagandize and spread their hatred to reach the media and wide audiences. After all, academia is society's source of education, from where society's leaders and presidents have emerged. Academia is known for its diversity and permissive libertarianism, an arena that tolerates the expression of whatever comes to mind, even if it might hurt someone else. Secondly, the roots of modern anti-Semitism were laid decades ago and have been nurtured patiently and cunningly. Its complex rationalizations did not suddenly spring out of thin air to become what they are today, mature and strong hatred. Anti-Semitism is so strong that it is almost impossible to tackle. What money can buy? It is suspected that radical Muslim elements penetrated and politicized universities many years ago to secure their place of influence with the help of generous financial support, as is currently being investigated by the U.S. Department of Education. He who pays has tacit permission to establish courses, programs and departments, according to his views and ideas, even at the expense of erasing other points of view and people. By quietly and steadily employing subversive operatives in key positions, it becomes increasingly impossible to close the door to further infiltration. Pluralism, not anarchy. Jews can no longer ignore what is happening right in front of their eyes and continue with a business-as-usual attitude, as if this is a small and passing discomfort. The animosity will not vanish until people realize that freedom should not be confused with anarchy, bigotry, discrimination and even physical attack to threaten or attempt annihilation. And Jews, a people with a vast history of pluralistic debate among their sages to reach truth and wisdom, can and should play a crucial role in fostering an understanding of true freedom for society. Dialogue should be encouraged with the intended end result of bringing about unity and brotherhood. Kabbalist Rav Yehuda Ashlag wrote in his essay The Freedom about the importance of the fundamental human value of freedom: just as people's faces differ, so their views differ. Therefore, society is cautioned to preserve the freedom of expression of the individual. Each individual should maintain his integrity, and the contradiction and oppositeness between people should remain forever, to forever secure the progress of the free society. But, as the wisdom of Kabbalah explains, freedom can work only if it is accompanied by the principle, love covers all crimes, Proverbs 10:12, as a basis to reach unity and brotherhood above our differences. A plethora of ideas and thoughts based on selfish egoistic interests only result in conflicts and wars. On the other hand, when we rise above human egoism, covering it with love, a myriad of ideas and thoughts develop and enrich all kinds of means of communication and connection. The Jewish people, with their long tradition of pluralistic discourse, are uniquely situated to play a crucial role in fostering the understanding of true freedom by first implementing among themselves the method of connection above differences and then passing on to humanity the positive force that is generated. It will calm down anti-Semitism and pave the path to a bright future of mutual understanding and harmonious relations. Attaining such an elevated state is the ultimate role of Jews, that is, to be light unto the nations. Expand your consciousness. Question: regarding the principle of the restriction of a degree of our world's essence, is each individual restricted in one's own way, or does it depend on the degree of consciousness? Is the restriction the measure of consciousness that can be limited by the capacity of the degree of certain consciousness? Answer: first of all, read Baal HaSulam and you will see how simple it all is. You restrict yourself. We are in the world of infinity even now. We are surrounded by infinity. But you restrict it to the meager volume of our world. You do this with your consciousness. So expand your consciousness and move forward. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, January 5, 2020. Envy, the key to a good, future, relationship. Question: is envy a way of personal identification with the superiority of the object that evoked such a sensation? Or is it a certain program of egoism, a manifestation of one's own essence in relation to social cynicism? Answer: I don't know what social cynicism is. Notions like this should be analyzed separately. Regarding envy, it is a very useful quality. It stems from the fact that we were together once, and certain mutual relationships, mutual sensations have remained in us. If we didn't have them, we wouldn't feel envy, you wouldn't feel others. That is why envy is the basis to very good future relations, love, and merger into one common whole. All of it is with the help of envy. This is why it cannot be eradicated. On the contrary, it should be developed. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, January 5, 2020. New Life Number 1188. Feeling Stuck in Life.
Hello and Thanks for being with us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yaela Shadarel. Hello. And today we'd like to talk about the feeling of stagnation in life. Sometimes we get this feeling that kind of overwhelms us. Sometimes it comes and goes. Sometimes it gets stuck. It stays. We'd like to understand, where does it come from? What for? Be with us, Yael, please. Yeah. We feel stagnation in different states, stages in life. There are people that even feel stagnation all throughout life. And it awakens different feelings like anger, guilt, I'm not good enough, and so on. Life is unfair, and people really want to get out of it, not knowing exactly what to do. And even though that we know that every person experiences stagnation in life at a certain point, but still, we see it as something unnatural, as if something's wrong with us. Something happened that it's kind of a malfunction. We don't see it as a natural part of life. And there is an attitude that says that stagnation is a natural part of life. So on this show, we'd like to hear, what does the wisdom of Kabbalah have to say about stagnation in life, whether it's temporary or something that's fixed? And I'd like to ask, how would you define stagnation from your point of view as a Kabbalist? I'd put it this way, that we're in a process that begins at a certain point and ends at a certain point. One way or another, we're talking about time, even though that there's something that's beyond time, but still, we're talking about times. And in that time in which we feel our life, we feel different, experience different states. A state can't change unless it reaches its previous end, and from there gives birth to a new state, and again, the end of the previous state and the birth of a new one. Sometimes we have pretty smooth transitions between the states, where we understand and feel how it goes by, with the help of different actions of ours. Suppose that we're engaged in certain activities or at work, or we're realizing some external or internal plans of ours and so on. And sometimes we feel that we're not really ready to change these states. Meaning that I either don't want to change a good state for something less, or it's hard for me to climb from a bad state to a good state, which also demands us to exert ourselves, make an effort, pay somehow. Meaning there are things here on the way that we get stuck in. So, the feeling of stagnation in life is a very good feeling. Really, it helps us understand, what did I have, what will I have, what do I want to have, why do I feel that I'm stuck? This is my own personal feeling, and maybe it's not really even so. And this way we have to understand the feeling of stagnation as a kind of stop along the way, that it seems to us that we're stagnating. It's like the holiday of Hanukkah in Hebrew, consisting of the words Hanukko, meaning parked here, that we have no idea what's going to happen next, but in the meantime, we're parking. And how will this end? We don't know. We're riding a train, the train stops in the middle of the way, no one says anything. What's going on? We didn't reach our destination yet. When? What? Nothing. We're stuck. And this is in order for us to make some kind of a revision, a re-examination of life, of our goal. Am I on the right train altogether? Or is something happening to me? The feeling of stagnation in life is a very good feeling, that if we're in it correctly, we understand that we can't advance without this stagnation, and that this stagnation is like birth. It's like the birth of the new, more whole state, already on a higher degree than before. That we smashed into a wall, we're stuck, our train's stuck, and now we have to rise to a higher degree and continue. And I feel stagnation in life as a kind of invitation. What gets stuck? Something internal, external? My mind and heart, which is all that I have. They served me on my previous degree, on my previous level, in terms of my philosophy in life and everything, in my previous state. But now, I already have to ascend to a higher degree and to understand the meaning of life, the purpose of life, a bit more. And then I continue. I can't continue without that. I'll get stuck at this stop, and I'll be stuck there until I'll understand. What am I exactly supposed to do? What am I supposed to advance towards? It's like I'm stuck with my previous program. Yeah, I have to change it. It's like I have to upgrade it. And move on. My question is, the way you see it, are there negative states of stagnation or are they all positive? Actually, everything's positive. There's no bad in life. Everything is good. But what we want is not just to have chassadim, mercy, but also good chassadim. What do you mean? We have to reach a state that in life we see only good things. Things that stimulate me, that push me, that pull me, these are all good forces. I should never interpret them as bad forces. There's no evil in the world. It only depends on the extent to which I understand the purpose of whatever happens to me. Okay, so you're in a state of stagnation. You're saying that it's an invitation towards a new state, but still I'm stuck. Meaning, I'm not taking the stagnation as a pause, like you said before, like a revision and the birth of a new thing, but I'm stuck, and it might take a lot of time. This kind of stagnation, like the one I'm talking about, isn't it negative? No. These are labor pains. Labor pains for how long? Mister, there are different states. So this is what I'm asking about. Are there states where it's already beyond the period of time in which you were supposed to give birth to this new state of yours? It all depends on the state you're in, the environment you're in, what coach are you sitting in. It all depends on your previous preparation. But actually, it's all in order for you to receive this new degree. And if you're not ready for it, then you have to wait some more in your current state and to feel the stagnation until the state will give birth to new feelings in you, consent with this new state, subjugation to this new state, and then you'll advance. Stagnation, is it also a matter of character? No, it depends on the measure to which a person's advancing toward the correct state. Changes in the process that a person's going through and all the states that we're going through in life, these changes, they're all accompanied by a feeling of stagnation, but it depends on how a person accepts it. Does he fight it? Or he understands that he has to fight himself. Sometimes there is a feeling that I did everything perfectly by the book, and still, as if life doesn't let me move.
No.
What do you think? I think that then a person's really stuck. Because he thinks that everything's fine with him, he did everything, and there's nothing more to do. Until he's stuck and stuck and stuck, and then he reaches a state where really he has nothing left to do by himself, but only to yell, help. And then he turns to his destiny, to the upper force, the creator. Depends on how he calls him or it, and this how he comes out of it. Is it a good state? It's excellent. Because this is the only source that can change a person's destiny. What causes stagnation? That same upper force that causes the stagnation, doing it on purpose in order for us to need him. So actually, the person himself, isn't he the one that determines eventually will he or won't he be stuck? If I'm doing the right things, if a person causes the right things, for sure he'll get stuck. This is a revolution. Not at all? Because then he will truly be needy of the upper force, will turn to the Creator, and he'll be in contact with the upper force. What could be better? I want to understand. How did we suddenly reach the upper force? Because we're talking about destiny, stagnation. I wasn't the one to bring this up. I'm just saying that there's a program in nature, and according to this program, we're stuck. You wanted to talk about this subject, and when I'm in stagnation, I no longer know who to turn to, what to turn to. There's some kind of destiny, some kind of feeling of stagnation in life, and what is there beyond life, some kind of program in nature that controls me, and so I turn to the upper force that controls my life, to that program. Obviously, I'm in a program, and if I don't believe in the upper force, don't. But you live your life. You don't choose how to live your life, when to live your life. You don't choose anything, what's going to happen the next moment. Of course not, especially not when you're stuck. And therefore, you turn to that source that arranges your entire life. And you ask him to scrutinize a bit what's going on. What is that source? Life itself. That life's making me stuck, with this I agree completely. But what is that force that motivates your life from moment to moment, from year to year? What is that force that controls your life? I don't know. So is there some kind of cause for the stagnation? That's exactly the question. It's that same destiny, the upper force, that's controlling your life. That means that it's known in advance where will I get stuck. This is something else. First of all, to accept the matter that we are stuck. What does it mean to accept it? To agree to be stuck? No, it's not that I agree, but I'm aware that I'm at a dead end. This is the first stage? Yeah. Being aware of my situation, right? That's the first thing. Second thing is, was I the cause of it or not? I don't know. Sometimes a person feels that he was the cause, that he did something wrong. Fine, so he should try and solve it himself. Eventually, he has to reach a scrutiny that his life is in a force called nature. That nature's arranging his life, and it's leading him through the different events of life, and that nature is also arranging this feeling of stagnation that he feels in life right now, and that from this feeling, nature as if invites him to take a look at what is life meant for, where does it come from, what for what purpose, and then a person starts looking. So he already then justifies the stuff that he's in life, that he's stuck. He's observing. I'm riding in a train, and the train stops in the middle of nowhere. And I don't know. I feel that I don't know what to decide, what's good, what's bad, what should I do? Nothing. So this is a very clear feeling that, first of all, humiliates me. And what do I do then? I want to demand an explanation about what's going on. People are really crying out. Everyone, what's going on with us? Who are they turning to? I don't know. But where is it all the time asking, why is this happening to me? There's no one to turn to. To nature, to that force. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. That a person has to scrutinize that he's inside of nature and that nature's leading him. And then he asks, what's going on? What's happening? I want to get an explanation. I want to know how to behave correctly. How to act correctly. And since a person starts asking about life with this question, he reaches a state where he understands that there's some upper force that he has to discover, that it's a higher program. Today it's easier to talk about these things because we're all familiar with these definitions from the world of computers. So there's a higher program that's arranging us, and we want to know how to turn to it, how to enter it, and how to find out what's going on with us. There are people that at this point ask themselves, what am I going to do? What am I supposed to do? So you're saying that, and a person that really asks himself all of these questions, what do you recommend him to do? To ask himself these questions by himself. There's no point in digging inside himself. People can't sleep at night because of, why did it happen? How do I solve this problem? I'm stuck. A fool sits, his arms crossed, eating his own flesh. Why? Because he thinks that things depend on him. So who does it depend on? Who can he ask? He's stuck. It depends on nature. What do you mean? I'm inside nature. I'm in a state where I feel that I'm being controlled. Did I cause all of these things? Someone else, maybe, but I don't know. I have to reach a state where I'm being controlled, that I feel that I'm stuck in life, and that I wasn't the cause of it. So the first stage is being aware that I'm stuck. Yeah. And the second stage is to understand that I wasn't the one that brought it about. It was arranged so by my program, and then I turn to that program and I ask for an explanation of why am I stuck? How am I supposed to understand this stagnation in life? To understand it how, feel it how. Nature is whole and complete. Nothing happens simply so in nature. The more we research it, the more we see that it is a whole and complete system. Why suddenly does it work towards me this way and towards everyone in general nowadays? Yeah, but it's something personal. True, but also along with it, I can see it also on others and see that our generation, this is how our generation is. You know, a sorrow shared is a sorrow half doesn't always work. Still, I'm stuck. And if a person feels that these are the states that he's in, then he has to reveal, open up the system and see. It's like if I have a machine that's not working, because all in all, we're in a system. It's a machine. So I have to understand, why is it happening? So I have to open up the machine and see what's going on there. No problem. Open and see. And these people, these are the people that come to the wisdom of Kabbalah. When my car breaks down, I take it to the shop, to an expert. Yeah. When I'm stuck, go to the shop. When I'm stuck, go to the shop. What is the shop? It's a shrink. It's what? Could be a psychologist, could be an ordinary doctor, or You come to a person or people that are familiar with this system, that are in it, that understand how it works on us, the system of the whole of reality, because you see that you're not crazy, that you're not ill, that neither a psychiatrist or an ordinary doctor can help you, but you feel that you're stuck in life completely. So you have to turn to people or maybe to an organization that explains to people what system they're in. This is what the wisdom of Kabbalah deals with. Okay, now if you can explain, according to what the wisdom of Kabbalah says, you said that when a person's stuck, he has to understand that he wasn't the one that brought it upon himself, but that it's life, destiny, and then he has to reach this need for an answer. Why is this happening? And then the way a person comes out of this state is when he yells, help. Coming out of the state of stagnation, does it go through a state of an inner cry, of an outcry? Coming out of stagnation is through an inner outcry. What is that outcry? I'm yelling, help. But it won't help. There are many people that yell help. This is my next question. Obviously, I only have to know who to yell to, who to turn to, and how to turn. That it's not just yelling like a child. People that felt that they came out of a state of stagnation without crying out, then it's not real stagnation. What do you mean? It is stagnation, but still they didn't experience such stagnation in which they have to consciously participate in. So there are different levels, of course. If it's a child that gets stuck, or even a cat gets stuck in a state where it can't get out of some closed place, starting to go wild in there. So what is stagnation on a higher, more advanced level? Stagnation on a higher level is that a person understands that it's the system that prepared the state for him and that he has no choice. Probably he has to get to know the system on a higher level. For what reason did this stagnation come to him for? Why in the program of his life does this stagnation exist? And what does he have to do from this point and on? Probably he has to essentially change something in life. Now about the outcry. You said that a person has to know who to cry out to and how, so it won't be like children's crying. So a person starts understanding that this is a whole and complete system that includes all people, and that it controls us in order to bring us to a certain state where we will get to know the system, that we will really start using it correctly, consciously, with understanding, agreeing with its goal. And this way a person starts understanding, oh, this is why I had the stagnation. So now I came to understand all these things, and now I'm entering this system with all that I am. Is this an intellectual process or an emotional one? Both, especially emotional. What emotions does it work on, apply to? Feelings of stagnation. That it's better to die than live this way. That I don't know what to do. I don't know how to advance. I don't understand life. I don't understand the world. I don't understand myself. I'm simply lost. I have to reach a state where it becomes clear to me. Who am I? Where am I? What goal am I supposed to advance to? Nothing's clear to me. Just like being born anew. The system that he turns to in order to get an answer, how does he turn to it?
He probably doesn't send a fax or email. It's all in the heart. It's all in a person's heart. It's not that there is some kind of system, some kind of office that he comes to and he says, this is what I want. So what does he do? He digs around inside himself until he reaches more essential questions, and then he reaches a place where he's helped to organize the questions and hear the answers. I want to ask about two common attitudes to get out of stagnation. One attitude says that in order to do this, first of all, you have to understand the person's desire. What does he want? And to what extent does he want change? Do you think that this is the right thing to do, to examine a person's desire? Here we're going into states that we have to maybe scrutinize in a separate talk. And also, our time's up, so maybe we will leave this for a separate talk. In short, about the feeling of stagnation in life. This is a place for a new birth, and we have to respect it, appreciate it, and to really be glad about it. Thank you very much, Dr. Lightman. Thank you, Yael. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.